So welcome, everybody. Welcome along. Hope you enjoyed lunch and you're not slipping into a food coma already. Wait until after the session, then coma away. So we're here to talk about release management for the enterprise and specifically release management for Visual Studio 2013. I want to talk about just not just the product, but as well why it's important that you get this release process and your deployment of your applications right, and you know how this tool can help you do that. So, just as to illustrate that, I'd like to introduce you to Frank. This is Frank. Frank is in charge of all the deployments at his company. So what that means is Frank is responsible for picking up the apps that the developers build and deploying them into their servers, get them up and running for their customers, right? So Frank's been doing this for a while, and after so many years, he's created this document, right? And he's got this big stack of 300 pages of checklist, right, that tell him exactly what he needs to do to get his application deployed. So when there's a new version of the application that the developers have produced, he will go through his checklist and he'll mark off all the tasks as he does them to make sure that everything happens correctly. Great. So Frank's actually quite good at this. You know, he's been doing it for a few years. He's so good, in fact, that he almost never has a problem with his deployments. Right. Well, he did have a problem with his deployments maybe 3 releases ago, but you know that wasn't his fault. What happened? Well, he did maybe miss a step. He's supposed to check what's in the package that the developer gives him, and one of the developers left the web config in the package that he gave him. Frank just forgot to check. But yeah, Brian left that web config in there, and so you know the deployment went bad, stopped working. It took them an hour to sort out, but that doesn't happen very often. So in general, Frank is really happy with this process. He's thinking it's the best way to do his deployments, right? And he said this in several meetings. You know, this is the ideal scenario. We've got this checklist. We've got these things that we work through, right? He's very happy with it. So Frank's an idiot. What he's doing is basically just running through a script. And there's nothing in his process that can't be automated. And Frank is not automated. Frank makes mistakes, right? As good as he is, he can still make mistakes. So what we really want is something that is not going to skip the web config check step. We want something that's going to do the same process every time, regardless. So I want to introduce you to release management for Visual Studio 2013. This is Frank's replacement. All right? And before you start feeling too sorry for Frank, Frank still has a job. Frank is on frontline support. Frank loves his new job. Anyway, so this is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about release management for Team Foundation Server. I'm going to introduce you to that product and talk about what it does and how it can help. We're going to look at how it works, and that's really important for understanding how powerful it is. So how it works under the covers, how all the different parts talk to each other, and why that's important. We're going to run through some of the key concepts, and the reason we're going to do this is we're going to do them in the order that you need to work with them in order to get the program set up or the tool set up and your deployments working and released safely and securely. So there's a lot of terms that release management uses and a lot of different moving parts, and it's important to understand what they are and how they work and why they work that way. So we're going to run through those key concepts in setting up a release template and then doing a release. Once we've run through that, we're going to look at how you can practically actually get started. So it's all very good me up here talking about it, but you want to be able to take something away and go back to your office when you finish and put something into practice. So we'll talk about what you need to do there. Then for the sake of completeness, I want to talk about some other options that are out there apart from release management. So there's some other tools that do very similar things, some really good ones that we use. So I want to talk about them just to make sure that you guys have the full story. So before we go too much further, you probably noticed I'm Australian. My name is Damien Brady. I'm an MVP in VSALM, Visual Studio Application Lifecycle Management. I'm an MSTS, MCSD, MBA, OMG, WTF Barbecue. I am the chief architect and state manager for SSW, which is a consulting company in Australia. We do Microsoft Stack stuff and training stuff and lots of things. And also recently, I co-authored this Professional Team Foundation Server 2013 book. I actually have a copy here. I want to give that away today as well, if anybody has a good question on the way through, particularly one that stumps me, and I can hand it off to some other people sitting in the front row. I only have one because I only have so much luggage allowance. Day-to-day, the stuff that I do a lot of TFS configuration and training, a lot of Scrum training and helping teams get up and running with Scrum. But most of the time, I'm on the tools. You know, I'm writing web applications using ASP.NET MVC. I write a lot of JavaScript these days as well, and all the good stuff around it. So the point of that is that I'm coming at this from a developer's point of view, not from a sysadmin point of view or a product spruiking point of view. I don't sell this product. I have no vested interest in how many copies Microsoft sells. So that's where I'm coming from. All right, enough of that. So intro to release management. What is release management for Visual Studio 2013? Well, firstly and most importantly, that's a really long name. So in the interest of slide aesthetics, I'm going to just reduce that to what is release management. If you hear me even reduce it even further, sometimes I call it RM. I apologize if that's the case. But release management is essentially a product that started its life with a company called InCycle Software. Microsoft acquired the product, which was called InRelease at the time, in about mid-2013. And since then, they've been working hard on it to improve the way it works and to integrate it better into TFS and so on. Like a lot of products, it started off as a third-party tool, though. Essentially, what release management is, it is a repeatable, an automated process driven by a set of components for deploying from Team Foundation Server to different deployment environments. Right, so there's a lot in that sentence, and it's poorly laid out. So I'm just going to run through each line one by one. Repeatable means exactly what you'd think it means. It means that if I do this release once, the next time I do that release, it's going to do exactly the same steps, right? So we're not going to have an occasion where poor old Frank forgets to check there's no web config in the package he's been given. It's going to be the same process each time. It's automated, which means that to a large extent, you can click release and it will do all its stuff. You don't have to worry about jumping onto servers and copying folders over here and all that kind of stuff. It's something that happens by itself across servers, all that kind of thing. Unlike Frank, Frank is not automated. It's a set of components as well. So it's not just one tool you install on your TFS server and everything's fine. There's a few different moving parts, and there are very good reasons behind those architectural decisions, and we'll talk about some of them. But there's a few different components that you have to configure. Now, it's for deploying from Team Foundation Server. However, you don't have to deploy from TFS. That's just a very nice integration that release management has. If your code lives in TFS, this is a great option. If it lives somewhere else, it's still a great option. You can deploy from a file location or you can deploy from TFS. It doesn't really matter. And you're deploying to different deployment environments, plural. So we're not talking about this is the tool that I use to deploy to production. We're talking about this is the tool that you use to deploy to each of these stages, to development, to test, to QA, pre-prod, prod, however many you have. It's just as important as well to note what release management isn't. And the number one thing is it's not a build tool. So it's not going to replace your Team Foundation build. You generally will have to build your software as well, and then release management comes up to deploy it out there. So that's the number one misunderstanding. The other thing, and here we come to one of the dilemmas of speaking about the whole Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Stack. So it's not intended for deploying to Linux, OS X, mobile, tablet, things like that. The problem with speaking about this stuff is that Microsoft has moved from you'll get a new product, a new version of TFS every couple of years and maybe one update, to we're going to push this stuff out as fast as we possibly can. So that's great for speakers because it means that we always have something new and shiny to show you. And it's also terrible for speakers because it means that you write slides that have things like this on it. And then by the time you go to present that slide, that's wrong. So that line is a complete lie. With Update 3, which came out not too long ago, they have released the ability to deploy to Azure without a deployment agent. So previously, you had to have a deployment agent running on a Windows machine to do the deployment. Now you can deploy to Azure and things like that without it. You can use PowerShell. You can use PowerShell. What is it? DSC? That's the one. I was trying to think of what it stands for, but I can't remember. DSC, desired state configuration. There we go. And it also supports Chef as well. If you're working in a totally non-Windows environment, you can make use of that. So this line here is a lie. So ignore that one. I want to talk about how it works under the covers, because I think that's really important to understand where the power in this application lies. So ultimately, release management consists of four components, kind of three. I'm going to talk about it as four. So there's the release management server. So that's a set of Windows and web services that live on your TFS server in general, or if you have a high throughput, we generally recommend you put it on a dedicated server. But these are the parts that control your application. There is the release management client, and that lives anywhere you want it to live. And it's essentially a WPF UI. And using that, you talk to the server and configure everything and set it up and do all that kind of stuff. Now, that you can put on as many machines as you want. So any of your developers or any of your team who manages the releases, they generally have a copy of this on their machine. It's also important if you're going to do continuous integration that you have a copy of this on your build server. And the reason for that is the build templates that release management gives you, when they trigger a new release, they need to know how to talk to the team, to the release management server. And the easiest way to do that is to have the client, which knows how to talk to the server, on your build server as well. So that's generally some good advice as well. The final bit, which is the most important bit really, and where the power lies, is the deployment agents. So these are little Windows services that sit on each of the servers that you want to deploy stuff to, right? So if you have, let's say we have a web application with a services layer as well, and we have a web server and a web services layer, and maybe a database layer as well. Let's call it a database machine. So you've got these three machines. You want a deployment agent on each of those machines, and the deployment agent is the bit that actually does the work. And because it's local on that machine, it can run as a local high-privileged user account, and you don't have to worry about giving a domain account access to do all of this stuff on this machine. So that makes it really powerful. It means that you can do pretty much anything that you could normally do from that local machine without having to worry about your security across all of these boxes. Now, in your environments, you might have, you know, let's say your testing environment, you have, you know, one web server, one database server. In your production environment, you might have three web servers and a database server. So you'd have a deployment agent on each of these servers that you're talking about so that it can do the work to release these things. The other fourth one, which doesn't really fit into these ones as well, but I put it in anyway, is the deployment tools. So these are little components as well that help the deployment agents actually deploy the software. So they're things like PowerShell and MSI deployers and stuff like that. They technically kind of live on the server, but it's the deployment agents that end up using those anyway. In all the literature, details that Microsoft gives you, they say these live on the server, but ultimately they're going to get run from the deployment agents. So here's kind of the super fun, happy path of how you put all this stuff together, right? Team Foundation Server will perform a new build of your software, and then that build will trigger a new release using release management. You can also trigger these manually, which we'll mention. And then the deployment agents, they actually pull tasks from the server to say, hey, have you got stuff for me to do? And if there is stuff to do, like a new release that's pending, then they'll do that work. They'll go and get the files that they need to do that work, and then they'll say, yes, I succeeded, or no, I failed, here's why I failed. And that's generally how it fits together. Now, one question that we quite often get is, why are the deployment agents continually pinging the server and asking for information? Wouldn't it be easier for the server just to say, hey, you guys, you've got work to do? Can anybody think of why that is? Like, why? Because it's quite deliberate, this decision. Yep, I heard that there. So, security. Yeah, so I heard security and firewall, and that's basically exactly the right reason. So if your deployment agents are living on these servers and they have to just talk to the server, then there's one hole in the firewall that you need there at the server. If you have 300 machines and the release management server has to push information out to those 300 machines, then you've got to sort out security across those 300 machines. Particularly in a production environment, you don't want to punch holes in the firewall outside your DMZ just so that DMZ, sorry. Just so I'm Australian, we say Z, DMZ, so that it can communicate across these things. You want to lock these things down. So that's the reason they do it. Now, this is a wall of text. Let's do this visually. So we'll walk through from left to right. So we've got a team foundation server. We do a build, and we drop our package into a deployment location, into a drop folder. And then we'll trigger a release. So release management, we'll say, yeah, great, release. That means I need to create these 5 tasks. Here's the next stuff I have to do. And the next time the deployment agent asks for a task to perform, it'll say, yeah, you know what? I do have a task. Here's a package. I want you to, run this stuff, do these things. The deployment agent will generally go and grab the files from a drop location. So it needs access to this drop location. There are other ways you can get these files to the deployment agent if you're worried about security as well. And the deployment agent will do that work. It will deploy that software, it will do its stuff, and then return a response saying, yes, I succeeded, or no, I didn't succeed. You need to fix things. And that's basically the process. Once this happens a few times with all of the different deployment agents that need to be involved, then you have a successful deployment to that location. You can, as I mentioned, also trigger a release from the client without worrying about the Team Foundation server at all. And that's obviously useful if you're not using Team Foundation server. And that process is much the same. Release management server will set up tasks and the deployment agents will pick them up. Right, pretty straightforward. Everybody's got that? It seems to work. Sits well? Good. All right. Now let's look at the product itself and how to actually configure this thing. So what I'm going to talk about is setting it up. I'll brush over that because that's the most boring part of it. We're going to look at actions and tools. So these are the different components that are used to actually do your deployment. We're going to look at the environments and the servers that you're deploying to and setting those up. We're going to look at the concept called release paths, and this is something that's fairly unique to release management, setting these up. We're going to have a look at, and this is the meat really, the release template. So this is the definition of your build, definition of your deployment, how you actually deploy a piece of software. And then we're going to look at the releases themselves. All right. So let's start at the boring stuff, the configuration. Now, that's your configuration screen, more or less. There have been some changes in Update 3, notably that you can configure Azure as well. So there's a tab for that. Essentially in here, there's a whole lot of little things to set up. The stuff that's important is your connection to Team Foundation Server. You can see a tab for that, Manage TFS. There's deployer settings, so things like timeouts for deployers and maximum file sizes and all that sort of crazy stuff. SMTP settings as well, so that the tool can notify people when they have to do some work, because there's a process around these stages of deploying a bit of software where people might have to do stuff. Say, yeah, this looks great in QA, push it to production. So you want to let those people know by email. Users and groups and pick lists, which is basically your stages. So all the different stages that you've defined. So a dev stage, a QA stage, a pre-production stage, a production stage, and so on. And also technology types. So you can call these things anything you want, but technology types are generally how you distinguish what a server can do. So your web servers, you might decide the technology type they care about is ASP.NET. And your database server is a SQL server and so on. So that all that does really is mean that when you set up your release template, you can target these servers quite nicely. It's much easier to do that way. Okay, settings done. Great. Everyone's configured. This is one of those things. You only do it once and then you never come back to it. So I won't come back to that slide. So actions and tools. An action in release management. An action is essentially a release step. It's a thing that you can do as part of your release. Now, out of the box, you get a whole bunch of these. So release management gives you a whole lot of these. There's more than 50 of them at the moment. Presumably, I say more than 50 because every time I do this, it's changed since the last time I did it. And there's things, everything from starting a Windows Azure VM, all the way up to, you know, running a process as a specific user, killing Windows services, things like that, all that good stuff. So those are the actions. You can find a list of those and you can explore and find them yourself. They're very easy to discover. A tool is essentially what the action uses to perform its task. So there's about 15 out-of-the-box tools at the moment, and things from like Azure VM Manager. And that Azure VM Manager is the tool that all of the start an Azure VM, shut down an Azure VM, recycle one, all this kind of stuff. They use that tool under the covers. You'll notice there's Azure VM, there's like DAC pack deployers, MSI deployers, all that good stuff. The really powerful ones, though, there's a command line runner and a Windows process. So what that means is you can do whatever you can do anything with a command line and PowerShell, which is, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm pretty sure that's absolutely everything you could do on a computer. If the actions and tools don't exist to do what you want, then you can write your own. So we'll have a look at, this is the MSI deployer. So this is actually one of the out-of-the-box ones. So this MSI deployer is actually built on PowerShell. So it uses a PowerShell, an MSI exec PowerShell script, and it runs that PowerShell with some arguments. So because there's all these screens everywhere, I'm going to use the pretend laser pointer. How cool is that? Anyway, so it runs PowerShell, and then it runs the command with MSI exec. And you can see here there's a resource in there. So this tool, we've packaged in a resource, in this case it's a PowerShell script, but maybe in your case it's something like an executable that'll go and send an SMS from your SMS gateway. Or, you know, anything you can think of. So anything that might be a little bit complex and a bit special for your organization, you can package that bit up and include it as a tool and set up an action to use that tool properly and then just drag that into your releases. So essentially this lets you do pretty much anything. So that's really, really powerful. Let's get rid of that. All right, the servers and the environment. So these are similar kind of words. People tend to use them a little bit interchangeably, but ultimately an environment consists of one or more servers. So let's say you have your test environment, right? And your test environment has a web server and a database server. Right, so the servers for that environment, like there's two servers for that environment. If in your production server you might have, sorry, your production environment, you might have three web servers which sit behind a load balancer, and well, you'd obviously only have one database server because I'm a developer and throw data wherever it goes. So three web servers and a database server, for example. So these are your environments, and you can talk about that as this is my dev environment, this is my production environment. The servers can be added automatically as well, so there's not a lot of configuration here. When you set up the deployers or the deployment agents on these servers, they'll start talking to the release management server, and then you can just hit a scan on here and it'll say, hey, here's some new ones, some new servers that have started talking to me. So you can configure them manually, but if you're configuring them manually, it probably means they're not talking to each other. So it's probably better to, if you can, get it to scan and add them automatically. Now, servers themselves can belong to multiple environments. So you might be using the same web server for your dev and test environments. So you're not restricted in that way. They can also have multiple technology types. So your initial like smoke testing environment might have one server which acts as the web server and the database server, for example. So you can set them up like that. It makes it a lot easier to have different environments. The other thing you configure when you're setting up servers that's really important is the access to files. So I mentioned before in that little walkthrough, the image, that the deployment agents will go and pick up the packages from a drop folder. Sometimes you're not going to have access to that drop folder, obviously. So you can actually configure it to get that information via the release management server over HTTP or HTTPS. So as long as you can talk that way, that's good. That will be slower, but if it's a security issue, then you know, that's a hit that you take. All right, so we've got our actions and tools. We know about them. We've got our service set up into different environments. Release paths is something which is important in release management. Now, a release path is essentially a workflow through stages. So you can see in the image here, we've got a dev, QA, and production stage in this release path. Now, the reason you'd have these different release paths is because you might have different processes for different types of releases. So your weekly release might go through all of the locations, but you might have an emergency release, which just goes QA production. So you set up these different release paths. You tell them, so for these stages, these are the stages you set up in the pick list, you tell it which environment this stage needs to point to. So, you know, the dev stage here points to my development environment, which consists of these servers as well. They're more or less one-to-one, you'll find, when you start using them, though. And the important thing here, though, is for each of these stages, there's a number of steps that happen. And this is all to do with compliance and all of that good stuff about finger-pointing, ultimately. It goes through an acceptance stage, a deployment stage, a validation stage, an approval stage, and different people are responsible for those different stages, which ultimately means, you know, if your production release goes wrong, you point at the person who was the last person responsible for that. Yes, it was fine in QA kind of point. But that gives you some good governance around the release process. Like I said, you can have different ones of these release processes, release paths, for different purposes. All right, now we can get to the meat. So this is the release template. So this is the definition of your release. So this is what happens for this particular application to get it to run in production. Right? It's essentially a deployment sequence that consists of your application, the actions that need to run around that to get your application deploying, and then there's a couple of other things worth noting. It's workflow driven, so Windows workflow. So if you're familiar with that UI of, you know, dragging bits into the little triangles, all that kind of stuff, you'd be familiar with how to set this up. And it means that it gives you quite a powerful workflow for different things occurring at different times. And there's a different process for each stage, which is important as well. So you have to actually define the process for deploying to test separately from defining the process for staging, for example. Now, obviously, they're not going to leave you completely in the lurch and remembering what you did. You can copy from one to the other. But there's usually a different scenario in production. For example, with web applications, you might want to take a server out of the load balanced pool, for example, then do its deployment and then put it back in and take another one out and so on. So that wouldn't happen in your test environment, but you might want that to happen in your production environment. So that's why there's a different process for each of those. All right, so let's have a look at what that looks like. So this is kind of the bit where you'll spend most of your time probably in release management. I'm just giving you a sec to absorb the beauty that is a WPF application. Okay, so there's a few important parts here. We can see at the top, we've got our stages that we're going through for this definition. And the dev one is highlighted now, which means this main window, this is the release process for the dev environment. On the left in our toolbox, we've got all the different things that we can drag onto our canvas there. So we've got, obviously, all of our tools. You can see down the bottom, Azure, IIS, all that kind of stuff. And we can see our components. So this is our application that we've configured. And we can see control flow stuff, so tasks that happen in parallel, tasks that have to happen in sequence, and then rollback tasks. So things that will roll back if previous events have failed, and things that will always roll back if anything fails. That process is a little bit complicated. I I'd recommend you look that one up before dragging those on. And then there's also the last step, manual intervention, which you should never, ever touch. Sometimes you have to do a manual intervention. Try and avoid it, because that kind of defeats the purpose. All right, let's look a little bit closer at the deployment sequence itself. So we can see, firstly, the first group of stuff happens with this server we've got here, this server called VSALM. And this is a server in the environment that we've been pointing to. So this is in the dev environment. We can see things like what technology types that supports. But in this case, you know, this is our one and only server. So the tasks inside this will occur there. First thing we want to do is remove the website. So this is a remove website action, which obviously will use the IIS, some IIS tool under the covers. But basically, we've just dragged this action on there. And then it's given us parameters that we need to fill in for this environment. We want to copy the file and folders. So this is running our backup. So we're taking the existing site, backing it up to a different location. Then we deploy our component. And we've set this up, and I'll set one up in a second, to this particular installation path. And then we're going to use the IIS stuff again and use the create website action and give it some configuration details there. So we create that website. Really simple, you know, it's a release process, right? Turn off a website, back it up, copy the new stuff over, turn it back on again, right? There's also a rollback step you'll see here. So this rollback step will run if stuff goes wrong, obviously. And it'll restore from the backup just a copy folder over the top. And then create the website again. So that's actually the same as the other one. I've just collapsed it. So that's pretty straightforward. So you do this just by dragging these items in and ordering them and so on. If you've worked with workflow before, you'd be familiar with it. Now, the actual components themselves, when you set them up, you have to configure the tool with all the different components, the things you need to deploy. You need to configure its source, so where it's going to get them from. You can either use the release management templates or build templates and say it's going to build with this one and you'll get a release triggered. You can say it builds independently. I'm going to do it myself and here's where you're going to get the drop, the built application. Or you can say here's a UNC path to the application itself. So I'm going to deal with that myself. Don't worry about it. Here's where you're going to find the application and I'll trigger a manual release. The other stuff you have to tell it with a component is how to deploy it. And usually you just choose an action, like an MSI deployer or a MS deploy or something like that, and tell it how to actually deploy your component. And then you can also set configuration variables as well. So if you have a web config, you can put tokens in this web config and have parameters override those tokens as well. So obviously you can have the same config for your product, and then when you deploy to different environments, it just replaces those tokens so you have the right settings and so on. So you configure all that stuff here as well. So that's your release template. You've got this template there. That's not actually released though. That's just how to release. So to actually trigger a release, you can trigger it manually or with a build in TFS. So manually would be going into the client and saying new release. The release management client app saying new release. Or you can do it from TFS, and release management will provide you with some build templates, and you can use them when you're defining your TFS builds, your team foundation builds, and they will trigger a release on your behalf and start that process going. When you trigger a release, so when you say, I want to do a release, you have to tell it what release template you're using, obviously, that makes sense, and you also give it a target stage. So this originally confused me, actually. I was thinking, well, we've got a target stage. When you set up the release template, you tell it you're going to use this release path. You know, you do dev, QA, production. But they've taken the position, and in hindsight it seems really sensible, that not every release is going to go to production, particularly with continuous integration. You might want to make sure that you've run your eye over the thing before you click the button to bring it to prod. And you don't want to kind of leave a release hanging at QA. You want to say, yes, this whole thing succeeded. So your CI build might go test, QA, and then stop there, and that's what I'm happy with, particularly if it's going to automatically go to the next phase. So when you say I want to do a release, you're saying I want to do a release using this template and only go to QA, and then I'm happy. All right? Makes sense. So The other thing which you might have noticed is when we were setting up those stages, there's different people responsible for the different steps in that. So who's going to sign off on the acceptance of the QA process? Now, you can do that through the release management tool itself, the client application, but you may not want to have that installed on every person's machine, particularly if it's your manager who's saying, yeah, that's fine, I've run my eyes over it, it's great, particularly because you actually need a CAL for that product. So they've released, it's a really lightweight web application that you can access called the Release Explorer, and that lets you do some fairly basic things without a CAL, so without a license. It lets you approve and reject releases, reassign releases to somebody else, have a look at the components that are being deployed, how you're progressing through your different releases and so on as well. So you can assign these jobs to your manager, for example, and they don't need any of these tools, they just need a URL to go to, and they can approve these releases, which is really handy. All right, so we've got that release now. So we've triggered this release, it's gone through our phases and so on. That's great. I've just talked about this for a little while, which is fine, but what do you actually do when you get back to your office is the question. So there's a few different things to do. Firstly, check your licensing. So the licensing is predictably easy to figure out. It is actually, there is a single page that has a lot of the licensing details. But one really important thing here is the deployment agents are actually licensed separately. So just because you have a release management server license doesn't mean you can put the deployment agent on 500 machines. Those are actually licensed separately. You do get a bunch of licenses with MSDN and things like that, so check out what you already have. They're not going to leave you in the lurch and say, oh, that we've got the server software for you, but you can't actually deploy to anything because you don't have any of those licenses. So in general, you'll be able to do most of this stuff, but check that licensing because it is a little bit tricky. You need to go and deploy the components, so deploy your server application, your client applications, and all your deployment agents. Configure them, set them up, make sure they're talking to Team Foundation Server. Set up your environments and your servers. So, you know, put the deployment agents on the servers and get them talking and doing all that sort of stuff. And then create your release templates. So this is the definitions of the releases for your applications. And then, if you're really keen, change your build process. If you're using Team Foundation Build, replace that template with one of the templates that release management provides so you can trigger a release when you finish building. That's kind of your gold standard, what you want to get to, an automatic release. And then you can release. So that looks like a lot of steps. The vast majority of those steps you'll only do once. Some of them, like figuring out your release template, you'll probably hit that a handful of times and say, oh, it's not quite working in this case, or we also need to do this step and so on. So you'll probably revisit that release template a few different times. But once you've got it nailed, it's an amazing experience from a developer's point of view. When somebody calls you up and says, hey, we've got this thing that we want you to change, can you look into it? And you say, yeah, fine. You pull up Visual Studio, you write your code, you do some smoke tests, you write your unit tests, and you write your UI tests and all that stuff that you obviously will always do. And then you check it in and call up the client and say, yep, that's fine, give it a couple of minutes, it'll be in your test server. If you're okay with it, go to this release management server URL and click approve, and then it'll go to production. That saves amazing amounts of time. And it's more than worth setting this stuff up, particularly if it's an application you're going to be working with for a long time. So I'd highly recommend you do that. And that ultimately means that last step is the only one that you're going to keep hitting eventually. You're just going to keep hitting that release step. So yeah, fantastic. When you're actually getting started, I mentioned the licensing. I've just set up a little short link there. Go there, have a look at the licensing for it. It does give you a good amount of information about what you need. They actually also release some quite good installation and user guides. So these are PDFs that you can download that'll walk you through installing and then walk you through using it. So they're pretty thorough, actually. They're quite good ones. The other thing I'd suggest you'd have a look at is Brian Keller, who's one of the one of the guys at Microsoft who does a lot of this stuff. He releases, I was trying to think of his title, and I went, nah, mind blank. He's the director of ALM evangelism. And you wonder why I didn't remember it. So he's a guy at Microsoft, but he releases these virtual machines all the time, and he keeps them up to date. They're basically ISOs. You can get them running on your own machines as VMs, and they will have TFS and Visual Studio and release management and stuff like that with realistic looking projects in progress. So you're not working from a blank slate. You're working from something that is relatively real. And you can play with them. You can trigger releases. You can do all that sort of stuff. They're really, really handy to use. So have a look at them. And there's also a book you should totally buy. Chapter 20, everyone. Now, for the sake of completeness, I want to talk about some other options that are available apart from release management. So the tool itself is a fantastic tool. It's still relatively in its infancy, so there's still a little bit, the occasional rough edge that you'll come across, but that's improving all the time, constantly. The other tool that we tend to use a lot is a product called Octopus Deploy. I love this product as well. I'm a little bit biased because it's born and bred in Brisbane, where I'm from, and there's three or four of my friends who are actively developing it. But it is a really good tool. It started to get a bit of attention. It's powered under the covers by NuGet. So NuGet, who uses NuGet? Yep, good. That's probably about 20% of the people, and everybody else is asleep. So it's powered by NuGet. NuGet has the great ability of being able to package a whole bunch of stuff and deal with versioning. So that sounds perfect for releases. So that's what they've latched onto, that technology, and they're using NuGet under the covers. All of the steps to actually release things are ultimately all pretty much PowerShell, which means if there's something you can't do, you can write a PowerShell script to do it. Now, I'm not a PowerShell expert, but I'll tell you who is a PowerShell expert: the internet. There's a script for it, trust me. So there are. It also has some really great integrations with TFS, and also things like TeamCity, Bamboo, Jenkins, stuff like that. If there isn't an integration for your particular source control system or your particular environment, then there's a REST API that's quite comprehensive as well, so you can write your own. So that's quite powerful. In general, the model that it uses, the way it does all of this deployment, is a bit simpler than release management. There's fewer moving parts, fewer things you have to define and so on, but that means there's a bit less governance around it. So you can configure it so only certain people can do certain things, but in general it doesn't encourage you to do that, which means that you can create a new version of your application and then somebody can push it straight to production without going through any of the other stages, which is obviously bad, unless you're in a rush. So that there is actually something on their backlog to put in some of this governance around it, but it's not really there yet. And it doesn't integrate very well with TFS in that respect at all. But again, this stuff is on their backlog. It's just that it's not there now. If you need this kind of integration, then release management is definitely the way to go. The other big difference is there's one deployment process regardless of the environment that you're in. So you have the same definition of a deployment for dev, test, QA, production. It's just that it's going to go to different servers. Now, there are ways around this. You can have steps in your task that only happen in certain environments, but what that means is if they're significantly different, you end up with 500 steps, and each environment has all these, or each one of those steps says, I work in test and QA, and I work in QA and dev, and I work in all this sort of stuff. It gets a bit messy. So that's the other main difference. Has anybody used Octopus Deploy? Anybody here? There's a handful of guys. I know you do. Yeah, okay. It's a good tool. I'd encourage, if you're using TFS for everything else, have a look at release management. It'll come of age and it'll start being a fantastic product without the rough edges once they smooth them over. But it's an excellent way to go. The other one which I keep hearing about is Redgate Deployment Manager. Has anybody used that? That is two people. Great. Redgate Deployment Manager is actually a branch. It's a fork off Octopus Deploy from about July 2012. they actually bought a license to the code and then pulled that in-house, and then they basically have gone their separate ways since that point. So under the covers, there's a lot that's quite similar, but ultimately, by now, there's some quite different features and quite different functionality. As you'd expect from a Redgate product, it's focused on deploying SQL databases and SQL Azure and things like that. It doesn't mean you can't deploy other stuff. It just means that that's kind of where this company's focus is. There's also some Visual Studio integration that they have, which is pretty handy, apparently. The integration with TFS, though, is not quite there. It does integrate with a few other things and so on, but ultimately it's designed at deploying databases. It's designed to do that via these Visual Studio tools and via the web UI. So that's an option there as well. The other one, which we historically have used a lot, is Team Foundation Build. So tacking the release process onto the end of your build process. And that's what a lot of places are still doing. Who's doing that at the moment? So their build will actually trigger a release to maybe their test environment or something like that. Yeah, so there's about 10% of people. That's good. What I will say for this is there is a fantastic Azure Continuous Integration build process template. So if you're deploying a web application to Windows Azure, the template for the builds is fantastic. It's really, really good. So if that's all you're doing and you're just pushing it to one location, go for it. It's a fantastic solution for that. In general, though, even with the other build process templates, you can use MS Build arguments to trigger MS Deploy, to trigger Web Deploy and things like that to push them to websites. That'll also work quite well. But if you want to do anything a bit more complicated that requires a few different steps to deploy, then you're going to have to hack around with the process template itself or write your own. And doing that with workflow with these templates is generally not that fun. That fantastic Azure CI deployment template, that's more than 1,000 lines of XAML. It's like 124 kilobytes of text. And yes, there's a designer, but that's a screenshot of that template halfway down. If you get to that point and you still know what's going on, good work. We're hiring. No, not for workflow. You can do this stuff, and if you're really good at building this stuff, fantastic. There's probably great options there. The big thing which turns me off this, though, is that tacking it onto the end of your build process means that it's built each time. So if you're deploying your application to a test environment, you'll trigger a build, it'll build your application, compile it, put it in its packages, deploy it to your test environment. If then I want to deploy it to a production or to QA or something like that, in general, I'll trigger a new build and it'll compile my application again and then go and push it out. What you really want to be doing when you're doing this stuff is releasing the same package to different environments. You don't want to recompile it again. And yes, it should be the same every single time, but you can't be 100% sure, right? That's kind of taken out of your hands. So you want to use the same package that was built and successfully tested in one environment and then move that to the next environment. There are ways around that, obviously. You can have build processes and build templates that only release from the previous build and things like that. So there are ways around it, but if you're going to do that, then you may as well just use the tools that are purpose-built for that. Right, so those are the other options that we've used. Right, so we've had a look. Where are we? 2:42. It's a good time for questions, I think. We've looked at release management itself. We've looked at how it works under the covers, so how those different bits fit together. And then we've walked through some of those key concepts and how you configure this stuff to get that working. We've also had a look at what you need to do to get started. So I'd advise you, if you do want to start, just have a look at that slide, make sure you've checked off all the things, or even better, get the implementation guide that they provide and make sure you run through all of those steps and check your licensing. And then we had a quick look at some other options. So that's me. Does anybody have questions? Yes, we'll start at the back.
Sure that the implementations are sequenced with the application base and the
Yep. Yep. Yeah, so the question, I think, I'll paraphrase, tell me if I'm wrong, is to do with SQL deployments as well. So making sure that when you're deploying your application that it's actually using the expected version of the SQL database and so on. So is that managed through that process as well? Can it be managed? Yes. Yeah, so that's right. So having something in the database to manage the versions is definitely really handy. But as part of that workflow, so when you set up your release templates, you can generally have different steps that target different servers. That's kind of the reason it's set up that way. So you might have a step to deploy your web application, or sorry, to turn it off, deploy your web application, then deploy the DACPAC or you know, run some scripts on the SQL server or whatever it is, and then run a command to tell you what version it is, make sure that succeeded. If none of that works, then you roll back steps or something like that. And then if that's fine, then you know, open up your web application again and so on. A lot of the actual management of versions of databases, though, are things that you're still going to have to think about individually. The tools aren't going to... I don't think there's an action available to, say, verify these versions match. That's something that your application... It's kind of an application-aware awareness thing. Only your application really knows what version of the database it cares about. But what the process will do is tell you whether a step succeeded or not. So it's not going to deploy your web application and then fail to deploy your database application, but keep going because it thinks everything's okay. It'll give you the ability to roll back if that stuff doesn't work. Yep. So the question was, can you schedule releases? And I think the answer is no. That's correct? You can schedule releases. Ah, there you go. That's right, sorry, yep. So sorry, the answer that was given to me by the kind Anthony Vaughton was yes, something I forgot. When you do approve a release, so if you're in that approver role, you can approve a release for a particular time. So you can say, I want to release this at midnight, for example. So yes, thank you.
For the schedule, do you need to include the approval process? Or what if you... Because some environment doesn't need approval, but you don't want somebody in the middle of testing and then changing it. So yep. You want dev to keep updating, but on test just once every morning. But that, you know, test, you don't need approval.
Yep. So the question, I think, was, do you need to go through that approval process to deploy? So what I'd suggest doing in that case is if you want to deploy to dev each time, like, you know, constantly, but you only want to deploy somewhere else once a day or something like that, I'd advise doing that by triggering the releases in your build process. So if you're doing Team Foundation build, trigger a release, and if you remember, when you say, I want to do a release, you choose a release template, and you choose a target environment. So your CI build might be a continuous release, use this release template, but only go to dev. And that way, that'll keep going. Your nightly release, maybe you have a scheduled build. And that scheduled build might be the same thing, but it goes all the way to QA. So that's your target environment. So that's generally how I do that. So the question was sensitive data like connection strings and things like that. I'm fairly sure all of that stuff is stored in the tool, and I don't think there's a secure way of storing that at the moment. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. Yeah, I don't think there is at the moment. So with connection strings and stuff in config files, there are other ways of doing it with like machine encryption and stuff like that, but that can be a little bit painful. In general, the permissions and the security around release management, you can set all that up as well. So people aren't going to be able to see them unless they have access to that particular area, I believe. So when you run the release management client, you're running it as you. And if you don't have permission to see that stuff, you can't see it. But in terms of keeping keys and things secure, I don't think there's a way of encrypting that information in the product. If it's there, it's there. Tell you what. Where are we? So configuration variables, can we all see that? So is this in the actual step itself? All right, so when you're actually setting these ones up. Okay, so the inventory will be where it is. So talking about the actions as well. So when you create the action, you mean, you can set those parameters up as secure. So does that persist in the database though? Or is that still unsecure information there? Right, yes, sorry. Okay, well there you go. Sorry, I didn't know that. So the answer looks like you can mark the configuration variables as secure, so you won't see them here. But if they get copied to the web config, obviously they're going to be in plain text there. So there you go. I haven't actually used those secure ones yet in the product, so I didn't know. I'll get a question from you because you answered that one.
Sorry, yeah, I just want to try. So in key display, can you set up the target one? The one we went, which we went for.
Yep. Yeah, so the question was, if you kick off the release from Team Foundation build, can you set a target environment? And yeah, the answer is yes. So when you trigger that release, you have to say, this is the release template and this is the target environment. So with your CI build, you'd say, release template is this one that we've got here, and I only want you to go to dev, or I only want you to go QA. So it'll go through that process up to that point. Yep. Yeah, so that'll be exposed as a parameter in the build definition itself. So the question was, are there any pre-verification steps that you can include in your process? For example, the app pool, is it available? I can't think of any. Well, we're looking at the actions now. So the actions are generally things that you do. So what I would suggest there is making sure that it will. So the general release process that we've used is a kind of a forward-only one. So rather than saying, is the app pool there, I want to cancel everything if it's not, say, is the app pool there? If not, try to create it, and then we're in a state where we can continue. If you can't create it for whatever reason, if you can't verify that that's the case, then that tool can return an error. So that might simply be a PowerShell script or something like that to say, check out the app pool, is it there? No, it's not there. Okay, we'll kill everything else if we can't resolve that issue. So that's generally how I'd implement it. There's nothing in the actual workflow to say, check this and bail if it's not the case. It's still step by step. Cool. There were questions around here. Yep. So the question was, can you initiate the agents from a remote location? And the answer is probably not. You can, those simply because those agents get very basic information about what to do. So it's part of the release process that the release management server will say to the agent, hey, run this task, here's the tool I want you to use, do all that sort of stuff. And the reason they hand that off is just so you can run it all locally. But it's the release management server that has to coordinate all of those tasks. You can't jump onto that server and say to the release management agent, hey, do this thing for me. Yeah, correct. So that's exactly what you said. There is an assumption that the deployment agent is able to talk to the release management server. Yes. Yeah. The question is that on the roadmap to change? And I'd say probably not. I think at some point you're going to have to, I mean, if the environment is so locked down that nothing's going to be able to talk to it, then you may as well run everything there anyway. If you're going to have to log onto that machine to run these tasks, then you're going to have to do that anyway. It's not asking a huge amount of that server. If it's locked down, it's locked down. There's nothing you can do about that. But it's not asking a huge amount to be able to do an HTTPS or HTTP call to a server to say, is there something that I can do? And get a response with everything it needs to actually run that task. But if you can't do that, then I think you're kind of out of luck. So the question was about PowerShell DSC support, which I was hoping nobody would ask me because it's brand new. And so the question was, it doesn't seem to be baked into any of the tools at the moment. Is that something that they're adding, or was that? Yeah. So release update 3, I think, will support it. So I'm running update 3 on here. So we can have a look. Is it in here, or is it going to be? Sorry, I'm referring to a couple of people in the front row who have used this more recently than me. So where are we going? PowerShell? I'm not even seeing that rule. Can anyone see anything PowerShell? I could just search, couldn't I? Hints, Anthony? Ah, that's a good question. So tools. Windows process. I may not have these tools installed. I'd have a look at update 3 and see what that is, because it only came in with update 3. If it's not there, it will be baked in very soon. I'd be shocked if they supported that and just didn't give you any actions to use it. So I'd just keep an eye out. I don't know the answer to the question is the short answer, though. I'm sorry. The question was, can we create a branch of the TFS production version automatically and label it? You'd probably be doing that in your release, in your build template rather than in release management. So if you trigger a build and say, trigger this release as part of this build process, then label it as part of your, I think that happens automatically in most cases with the build process templates. So you'd only want to do it off the production release, and you're not going to know that until after the fact. Is that right? You'd probably have to, you can always have a look at release management and say, this is the version that it was run, and then go and label it yourself, but I don't think there's an automatic way of doing it at the moment. I'll look into that. If you wanted to shoot me an email or tweet or something like that, I'll look into it. Yeah. Yes? The question was, it seems to be focused around web and so on, and maybe Windows Forms and things like that. How suitable is it for a Windows, for a BizTalk application? I would say it can definitely be used for that, but I wouldn't know the steps to do that stuff. I'm a web dev, so I think rather than the product being focused on that, I'm focused on that. So those are the tasks that I've set up as well. Whatever's involved in doing a big BizTalk release, if you can do it through PowerShell or through the command line, or you need other tools, you can absolutely do it with this product. So a tool called MSTT...
BDDF.
BDDF. BizTalk deployment framework. So you could probably wrap that up in a tool and bring that in as a as an available tool and so on. So I might have to cut it there, guys. I'll be outside after this. It's a couple of minutes too. So thank you all. If you want to catch me outside for more questions, I'll be there.